Welcome to In Focus. I'm Anthony Morneau. Our guest today is Vicki Harrison. She is Executive Director of Common Cause New Mexico. We are going to learn more about their 2018 legislative agenda. Vicki, thank you so much for joining us.
Great. Thanks for having me. Always enjoy coming to Las Cruces.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. Now, I'd like to learn a little bit more about your organization. We probably have some audience members who are not familiar with Common Cause New Mexico. Could you share with us your mission?
Sure. You know, Common Cause was created back in 1970. Our founder, John Gardner, a Republican, looked around D.C. and he said, everybody's got a lobbyist, but the people. Where's the people's lobbyist? And so Common Cause was founded. You know, it was around Watergate, and just the very next year, one of our founding board members, Craig Barnes, who was a big influence here in New Mexico, said, hey, states need common causes too. So now in 2018, we have over 1 million members nationwide. We're in 35 states and in DC, and we work for good government. We work for the Ethics Commission and Redistricting Commission, lobby reform, voting rights. So we are up there, you know, as my partner puts it, my job is to convince people in power to voluntarily give some of it up. And so we work on a variety of things around New Mexico and are enjoying, you know, after more than four decades here.
Now let's talk about this year's legislative agenda. One of the things you already brought up was redistricting.
Yes.
Your organization has called for a state redistricting commission. Could you share with us a little bit more about what you propose that organization or body be?
Well, you know, this is something, Anthony, we've been working on for many years, and the redistricting issue has really heated up around the country. The Supreme Court is looking at several cases right now, some involving Democrats gerrymandering, some involving Republicans gerrymandering. And what that means is that the legislators are drawing districts to suit themselves and their parties. And it's basically legislators choosing their voters instead of the other way around. So we've been working on an independent commission in New Mexico for many years. We have a constitutional amendment this year. We've got Representative Carl Trujillo and Senator Mark Moores are both pushing that, and we hope to get some hearings. It's a tough battle. We've got the census coming up in 2020, and then, you know, this is something that's really important for New Mexico. When you look at the studies, we're one of the top two undercounted states for the census because we have such rural places. We've got many different native languages. We've got a lot of space to cover. And so if you're undercounted in the census, then that means a lot less federal money coming to your state. So this is something that's critical as we look to 2021 when all of these districts are going to be redrawn.
Well, what about redistricting how it is right now in New Mexico? How do you think it, you know, it is flawed besides, you know, not knowing the diverse communities that are here already?
You know, our legislators have actually done a pretty decent job in many ways in doing the redistricting, but at the same time, we see these problems, which are, you know, lack of public participation. You know, these meetings are open to the public, but there's very little media about it. People don't know about it. They don't know how to get involved. There needs to be more transparency.
Well,
with the way we
how do
it.
You think this could be more transparent?
It could be more transparent by having not legislators do it, by having an independent commission that is made up of the people, that many other states have looked at this. And we've already got this in Santa Fe for the city. They do redistricting as a citizens commission where there's input. There's so many algorithms and computer programs out there that it's easy to find that you make sure you don't, you know, for me, Anthony, the biggest problem I saw with redistricting in New Mexico was back in 2012, and I was driving through Mountain Air, and it was an election year, and I saw a big sign that said Phil Griego for State Senate. I literally pulled over because I thought, wait a minute, Phil Griego is north of Santa Fe. Well, in the 2011 redistricting, his district went from north of Santa Fe all the way around down to Capitan. And that is a problem because north of Santa Fe and Capitan are very different places. And so we need to make sure that the district lines are drawn fairly. And that's not saying the legislators can't do it, But people need to be involved, because if it's done behind closed doors and it's done with politicians, the public is suspicious. As much as we try to convince them that the vast majority of those legislators are doing the right thing, they're looking at Congress and seeing nothing get done, and that is trickling down to how they feel about their state legislators as well as their local elected officials.
Now, as far as, you know, you brought up, you know, that this is so important to many people. Is this an issue that people really seem to care about when it's too late right now?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely, Anthony. Unfortunately, because, you know, democracy is wonky and it's messy and it takes forever and it's back and forth, but it's our foundation. You know, it's never sexy. It's never a bill that, you know, we're going to stop something tomorrow and everything's going to change. It's very incremental. And, you know, it's like a lot of the issues that I work on for years, then suddenly everything's on fire because something's going to happen.
Now, why should people in the second congressional district care so much about this? I mean, it's obviously a very wide district. I mean, you have a bulk of the population that lives around the Albuquerque area and,
right,
then above there. But it's, how could this really impact this area that seems to be so sprawled out here in southern New Mexico?
Well, I'm right there with you. I'm in the third district up north, and talk about sprawled. And our congressional districts are pretty good. It's kind of easy because we only have three. So we don't see the gerrymandering that some of the more compact states see. I think the southern part of the state will see this just along with everybody else around the legislative seats, around your state senate seats and your state representative seats, and making sure that they are more contiguous, that they represent communities of interest, and that they take all of the education and, quite frankly, case law at this point. Because, you know, we have people in other parts of the country, in North Carolina, in Wisconsin. We've got other cases that are popping up where people are, you know, literally drawing maps to make sure they get more of their party elected. Yeah. And we need to make sure that never happens. And transparency is always the best way to restore faith in government.
Well, let's talk about the people who vote to put those people in power.
Yes.
Voters.
Your
organization has called for automatic voting registration, is that correct?
Right.
So how do you see this happening, really, and being put into place, if this is possible and can be done in New Mexico?
It's something that can easily be done. You know, a couple of years ago, we passed online voter registration in 2015, and it's been wildly successful. It doesn't mean that we get rid of the old paper registrations that people do. It's just in addition to that. And we see this as the next logical step to where, and we've seen other states do it very successfully. It's passed in, you know, bipartisan, unanimously in other states, from Illinois to Rhode Island to Oregon, California. Many states are looking at this. And what would happen, the way I envision it, you know, it's already federal law when you go into an MVD, they have to ask you, do you want to register to vote? Would you like to update? That doesn't always happen. This would just take it away from that person, where we have human error, which is always going to happen. And I envision it just being part of the screen that you pass through. And it gives the people, just everybody is, says, boom, you're automatically registered to vote unless you say, no, I don't want to. It would just streamline a process that's basically already federal law. It makes it easier. And the reports that we have seen after this was implemented just a year or so ago in Oregon is pretty exciting. The people who were automatically registered to vote voted at a higher percentage than people who sought it out, which was exactly the opposite of what experts expected that data to be. It's not forcing anybody to vote. Of course, I would love compulsory voting. I would love Australia. I would love it to where you had to vote. And we got, I mean, this country ranks as one of the furthest down across the world as far as voting. We're like number 30, which is ridiculous.
And you think that's because, so, you know, when we vote, it's usually during the week?
There are so many reasons.
There's
so many reasons.
There's
no holidays. Many other states have restricted early voting. They have gotten rid of polling places. You know, New Mexico is really a shining star as far as voting laws, except for one thing, and that's our voter registration deadline. It cuts off 28 days before an election, which is way too early. many people need to still change if they've moved. You know, we think that people are thinking about elections 12 months out of the year, but they're not. And this is just another step that if we could, you know, we want to make sure that everybody can vote and everybody who is eligible can get there and vote. And, you know, I took a call a couple of years ago, and it was during a big election, and I live in Rio Rancho, and this woman happened to also live in Rio Rancho, and she didn't get to vote, Anthony. She had stood at three different convenience centers for over an hour, three different times during the day, and ended up having to leave to go to work, to pick up her kids, and then get to school. So she wasted 3 hours on election day and never got to vote. That should never happen to an American.
I want to talk about something else that your organization has called for, and that is to call on Congress to address the issue of money in politics. And we talked about this earlier, partisan gerrymandering as well. You're asking for the legislature to call on Congress to do that. You know, we live in a Citizens United world.
Right.
Have we already crossed that line? Do you think it's too late for the country to really, you know, address this? I mean, even if New Mexico could call on them to do that, I mean, the way the system is right now, the way the partisan politics play a role, the disclosure of not knowing, well, I guess the literal disclosure of money in politics with super PACs and things like that. How do you see that being addressed if the Supreme Court has already ruled on this?
Exactly. It's been tough, Anthony. You know, Citizens United blew the gates open on contributions being unlimited. And as many a good attorney has told me, it's not like things were rosy the day before Citizens United. We already had unlimited spending thanks to a ruling back in the 70s. And so what this is it's called Fix It America. And it's a constitutional amendment, as you mentioned, that would deal with money in politics and gerrymandering. You know, when Citizens United ruling came down in 2010, a couple of years later in 2012, we became the second state in the nation to call on Congress to overturn that. We're now almost to 20. Hopefully New Hampshire will join us this year. And about 700 cities and counties have called on Congress to do this. It's an uphill battle. It's another piece in the pie. I always tell people that there's no panacea to get this done, but the way the public feels about this, Anthony, this is absolutely not too late. Yes, every election gets exponentially more expensive.
I guess we're looking at billions. You have to really raise over $1 billion to become president of the United States right now.
Predict at this point how much money you need. When we look at even the smaller races where we're talking about city councilors and state representatives, and it's out of control.
But is that where it starts in order to counteract this at the local level?
I think it does. It always starts at the local level. We've seen so many good things that have passed. You know, our problem in New Mexico is we don't just have to deal with the Supreme Court and things like Citizens United. We also have to deal with the 10th Circuit, which is our ruler out here in New Mexico. And they have made, boy, some humdingers on campaign finance. I mean, for example, a few years ago, they ruled that a PAC could be coordinated and uncoordinated at the same time as long as they kept their money in two separate bank accounts. Now, that's just ridiculous. The Second Circuit, 3 months later, what are you talking about, people? That doesn't even make sense, because the coordination comes from the conversations and the strategy, not just from the money. And so Fix It America, you know, they're pushing a similar one right now in New Hampshire, which as part of that would also bring them as the 20th state to call on the Supreme Court and Congress to overturn Citizens United. And it's just another piece moving us forward, because when you look at what the public thinks, we have 95% of New Mexicans want every single penny disclosed. And we're not even asking for that. The courts have said you can't do that. Mm-hmm. You can from the candidates and you can from the PACs, but not from those independent groups. And so that's why we worked so hard with the Secretary of State's office last year to promulgate these fantastic rules that have really will give us as much information as the courts will allow us to right now.
Now, you mentioned the New Mexico Secretary of State's office. You're also calling for that office to be funded
yes.
more than it is right now. Your organization says that it is severely underfunded. What are the most critical ways that you believe the office is being underfunded right now?
It has been underfunded for years, Anthony. So about 10 years ago, we passed a bill in New Mexico to allow for public financing for judges at the Supreme Court and Court of Appeals and the PRC. Came a couple of years later. And so there is a fund, the Voter Action Act and the Public Financing Fund for this. For many years, the legislature has been taking money out of that fund and putting it in the elections budget for the Secretary of State. So they've been taking money out, and now we get to this year when we've got all these court judge judicial positions up, we've got PRC positions up, and just a few months ago, the Secretary told the legislative committee that if people do it right now, they're only getting 24%. That's now gone up to 40%. But then we got into the budget this year, and not only were they not going to fund it again, they were going to once again take money out of that fund to pay for elections. So as of now, and of course this is always changing in the legislature, that money has been restored, and it's looking good for her office to be funded. She also needs technology funding. Mm-hmm. Anybody trying to use their campaign finance information system, CFIS, knows what a pain it is, and that's something that the office has been asking for the last several years. We need more compliance officers to help with all of the things the public wants. Auditing of campaign finance reports, doing ethics trainings, getting this information out there and making sure that everything is correct. Plus, Anthony, we've got big elections coming up. We've got a primary and a general.
Well, I want to talk to you about that. You know, if the Secretary of State's office is not funded properly and into what your organization says it should be, or, you know, doesn't have the technology that it may be needed for the upcoming elections, how do you see that impacting these elections?
It could absolutely impact. I mean, we have vendors that the Secretary needs to pay now for the primary to get everything set up to make sure. You know, we're lucky enough to have paper trail ballots in New Mexico. That is incredibly important, you know, with so many people going to electronic, which is great, but we've got that backup paper ballot in case anything goes wrong. And so there's a lot of moving parts, making sure, you know, she's got poll workers around the state and making sure the convenience centers are set up in the places. You know, we've got 33 counties and we're a really big state. There's a lot of logistics that go on making sure that early voting is set up, which is particularly important when you're in your rural areas, because you've got, you know, sometimes you can travel a long way to a polling place. And being able to have a couple of weeks to do that is particularly important for our elderly and rural population in New Mexico. So I think that this is critical. Our previous secretary had to go and ask for emergency funding in the middle of the year from the Department of Finance. And I see something like that happening again if she's not fully funded.
Lobbying reform. Why does New Mexico need to address this issue?
We just don't have enough information about what lobbyists spend and what they do in New Mexico. And we are going to, the governor gave us a message, and Senator Daniel Ivy Soto introduced a bill that will fix a glitch from a previous bill. So things under $100 will once again be reported in a cumulative total. But we've been asking for lots of stuff. We want to know how much lobbyists are getting paid. We want to know the exact bills they're working on. There's all kinds of stuff that we'll keep pushing for.
Okay, Vicki Harrison, thank you so much for joining us on In Focus.
Thanks for having me. It's always fun.
And we want to thank you for joining us on In Focus. Remember, you could always stay connected to KRWG on social media. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at KRWG. I'm Anthony Moreno.